Well, it is really good to be back with you again today on a beautiful day that we have, a fall day. I don't believe there's a cloud in the sky, as Barbara and I were talking about as we drove around the loop. It's beautiful out, and it's good to be able to get back to assemble with the saints here, do things here that many people don't ever do. Singing with the saints in glory, like we just said, is one of the great things that we can do as we come together. And I want to go, if I could, go with me back to one of the favorite chapters that preachers like to preach out of, Hebrews, the 11th chapter. And there are so many chapters in the Bible that, the Sermon on the Mount, and I guess Acts 2, especially Acts 10. And there's just so many wonderful chapters that have so many sermons out of them. And probably, I was in college one time and a professor was talking about don't worry about maybe having somebody else's sermon outline. He said you could pass out the exact same sermon outline to 10 different preachers and have them preach it the next week. And he said they wouldn't preach it the same way. People don't talk the same. They don't think the same. They don't present things the same. And so, but anyway, well, when you come to some chapters, there are just some great, great lessons that we can have. And that's what I wanted to look with for just a little while. Hebrews, the 11th chapter. Begin with me in verse 23, talk about Moses. Hebrews, the 11th chapter and verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. And by faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. Again, there's just so many wonderful thoughts that take place there. And there's so many things that you just wish you knew, so many things about the life of Moses. And I guess that's the way it is with so many figures and books in the Bible. It doesn't give you everything. It didn't totally exhaust the entire life of a person that as much as we have about Christ, there's still so many questions that people have about Christ and his movements and many of his teachings and how things happen. But the faith of Moses is what I wanted to talk about just a little bit this evening. And it's from Hebrews, the 11th chapter. And again, as you think through that, there's so many points here just in this verse 23 to 28 that you could come up with. But just to talk about Moses and how he has this place here in Hebrews, the 11th chapter for you and I. Moses was a tremendous figure throughout the Bible, throughout the Old Testament, and then as it can develop into the New Testament, the differences between the old law, the Mosaic law, and the development of the new law, but Moses still held such a great place in the minds of so many people, especially for years and years, as the first Christians obviously were Jewish, and it was that way for a number of years. Maybe until Cornelius' time came about, and then the church started spreading in all directions. And it's interesting that there's been some estimates that by the end of the first century, by 100 AD, the Gentiles had taken over the Jewish Christians in the size and the number of Christians that there were. But that's an estimate. But it's also an interesting story. But Moses here was someone. We can appreciate his faith and what his life was like. And we just have the outlines of his story, but there's so many wonderful lessons there. He's born into slavery. That's not the way the Jewish people started out in Egypt. They went down when Joseph was the governor of Egypt, I guess you could say, or the prime minister. He was, by the time you come along to Moses, he is born in poverty. And yet, amazingly, he's adopted into royalty. Just this stark difference in who he was. He becomes the daughter of the Pharaoh's daughter. He becomes the son of Pharaoh's daughter, excuse me. And he was raised, amazingly, had it all worked out. He was raised by his mother. And that was just a fascinating thing. To justify Moses' faith, though, is he became a leader. He was a liberator. He was a person that was known just throughout the centuries and still to this day as the lawgiver in the name of God, that he delivered the people to Mount Sinai and then delivered them through the wilderness. And then he appears in Matthew 17 at the transfiguration of Jesus, Moses and Elijah. And those are just two powerful figures there with the Son of God as he is transfigured. And there's so many thoughts about that, so many questions about that. But when we look at the faith of Moses here, because it's what's outlined here in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, just so many things. You read down through here, Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and many others. But when you come to Moses, it just boom, boom, boom. Verse 23, by faith, Moses. Verse 24, by faith, Moses. And verse 27, by faith, he forsook Egypt. Verse 28, by faith, he kept the Passover. By verse 29, by faith. It just emphasized over and over this great deliverer's faith is what made him what he was. And that's the great part of the story. And so when we look at it, you might have different thoughts about it as we go through it, but there are several that jump out at you. Number one, look at verse 24 and 25. We just read, by faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Wow. And how all of that happened, I still don't understand how it took place back there in Exodus, Exodus 2nd chapter, when he's put into the little ark and his mother is able to nurse him. But you don't know how long that lasted. You don't know where, as you read back there in Exodus 2nd chapter, when he became of age, the Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and made him her son. And you don't know how all that worked out. But that's what we see here, that when he became of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And not knowing how that all worked, where did he get this knowledge and this thought that I really don't belong here? I'm not really part of this. I'm not really of the Pharaoh's family. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. But the faithless in our day and time, when we think about that, Moses has had this ability to look beyond the present right now. And that's what he is saying there. By faith, when he became of age, refused to be called son of Pharaoh's daughter. Probably the wealthiest monarch in the world at that time. And certainly Moses would have been a part of that. And it goes on to say in verse 25, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures. Other translations, instead of saying passing, say temporary pleasures of sin. He was able to look beyond the present. What a tremendous lesson. I mean, that's difficult for us to do today. I mean, we get so hung up in and so all the demands about us that are coming up on us, and we're having to make decisions every day. It's almost demanded of us that we keep our focus right here. And then there are so many people that just see life as the present now. But he looked beyond the present now. So many people's attitudes are, well, if it makes you happy, do it. And 10 years down the road, there has terrible consequences. Or if it makes life easy, or if it makes life fun, or if it puts you at the center, then certainly it must be Good. Paul, many centuries later, would write over in 1 Corinthians 15 talking about eat and drink and be merry, for tomorrow we what? We die. Well, that was the way they thought about it in that day and time, and I assure you that that's exactly how people think about it today. But faithfulness on the part of Moses had any beyond his life, an eternal concept about it, kind of like Paul wrote in Galatians, the second chapter. In Galatians 2, Paul writes this famous statement. He said, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. The life I now live. Paul lived for what reason? He lived it for God. He lived it for Christ. He lived it for eternity. Man, what a lesson for us today. And so as we would continue to read this passage in Hebrews the 11th or 11th chapter or Acts 2 or Acts 10 or many of the other chapters, thinking about what is being demanded and expected of us, that although I've got responsibilities and demands that are made upon me here, there's also something about my life that points me down the road. Not just to my death, but beyond my death. The idea of recognizing that I am eternal being. I'm not just a physical being. Let me suggest to you another one. Verse 27. In verse 27, it says, in verse 26 and 7, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Verse 27, just this first one there, that he believed in an unseen reality. Again, verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Moses' life was beyond his physical life. And we can do that. We can live that way. And I'm assuming that's exactly the reason we're here tonight, to be able to assemble with saints who want to worship the Lord, who want to be a part of a group who magnifies and praises and worships him. That reality is something that is beyond our physical. That's what the Bible teaches us throughout. But this is exactly what one of the great leaders of the ancient world actually lived. And there is a spiritual credibility about the life that we live in with our faith. Hebrews 11, verse 1. Faith is what? Faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the evidence of what? Things not seen. That's what this is doing. It's telling us. It's recording these people's lives for us and how it can affect our life. And that there is evidence of the existence beyond what we can see with these eyes, but what we can see with our mind, or also what we can understand from God's Word. Psalms 19, verse 1. The heavens declare what? The psalmist David, 1,000 years before Christ, would write, the heavens declare the glory of God. When you look at the heavens, he said, we can see God's power, his strength, his thinking, his desires, his plans. Over in Romans, the first chapter, we read down at verse 20, Paul writes this, 1,000 years after David. Romans 1, verse 20, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. The things we see had makers and designers and builders, whether it be a car or a house or a monument, a 200-year-old monument or a 1,000-year-old monument. And we see that very thing with regard to the universe itself. And as you read in Psalms 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God. And when the Greeks looked at the universe, they saw order. They saw order in time. They saw order in the repeat of the year. And they saw order in the way things happen, whether kind of like Solomon was talking in the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, the continual process of the rain and the evaporation and going back to the mountains and raining again. And they saw these processes, or the process of growing of crops. All of these things had an order to them. And they'll use the word, as a result, they used their word for order was kosmos or cosmos, as opposed to the word chaos, which means disorder, disunity, something that's not held together. And they didn't look at the universe like that. And that's the way people look at it today. And it's one of the more difficult, demanding things that we have in science today. Einstein believed that the second law of thermodynamics, law of entropy, Germans call it entropy or entergy, kind of the way they said. Back in the 1840s, they were working on this idea of systems and how they work and how things inevitably go. And they were working on the idea that everything seems inevitably to run down and wear out and rust. Something like that. You buy a car that's 20 years old, or an old truck, you can put it out in the field for 20 years, you know what it's going to look like. Or a shovel leaned up against the side of a barn. It's going to rust. It wears out. It wears down. That's what the Germans were calling entropy, and it came in English as entropy. Trope means to a change. And entropy meant there was a change within. Something's happening. Things run down. They tell us now that our sun is going to wear out in, I don't know, 2-3 billion years or something like that. But it said that's just the point of our universe. And yet the Greeks could not understand, well, then if that's the case, how do you get order? If you start here with order and it runs downhill, how did it get up here to start with? And this has been one of the fascinating things in the development of science through the years, and it's going to continue to be an interesting question. But also this idea of believing in an unseen reality had to do also with the Bible. You can see those things. There's just this marvelously self-evident, inspired book. Demonstrates divine authorship. It demonstrates staying capacity for not just decades or centuries, but for millennia. Jesus said in Matthew, the 24th chapter, verse 35, said, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words will what? Never pass away. And that's been true for 2,000 years. It's one of those things that you look at and you see the call of Christianity and the preaching and the teaching of Christianity in one very real way doesn't call to the rich and the famous and the powerful and the movers and the shakers. It's just, for the most part, humble folk who want to believe in Jesus and serve Him and magnify His cause. But that's not the group that makes all the changes in history. You know, most of the time I say the winners are the ones who write history. Not the case with regard to this. Eyewitness testimony that you see all through here. Eyewitness testimony that he was a miracle worker, which was just fascinating in that day and time. Like John 3, verse 1, Nicodemus would come to him and say, we know you're a teacher come from God because no man can do what you do. Everybody thought that. So much so that those who were his enemies thought he did it how? Through demons. And you have this, the way Christianity began, just like the nation of Israel, the way Christianity began was a miraculous origin. All I got to do is go back and read Mark 16. Read the first few verses of Mark 16. It's talking about the resurrection of Jesus, and the angel says he's not here. He's been raised. And then you have Acts 2 and then Acts 10. And those things move those people. And even though there came this difficulty that early Christians faced, and they were persecuted and prosecuted, and they went in every direction, they went everywhere preaching the word. Not like you would think it would happen. But Moses believed in an unseen reality. He looked beyond this life, and that's exactly what and why it's in Hebrews the 11th chapter. Well, not only that, back in our text there, verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Same verse. He feared God more than he feared man. I'm not so sure he didn't fear the Pharaoh. Probably did. If he had any sense, he would. But he feared God more. And he would act in a way and do things that would be contrary to what the most powerful monarch at that time would have them do. And that's not the way people normally act. People many times often avoid what's right because they don't want the conflict. They have a fear of the collection of mankind. John, the 12th chapter. Here's a group, probably some of the best educated people in the Jewish community. John, the 12th chapter, and we read verse 42. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. You had a group of people there that believed in Jesus, but they kept their mouth shut. And it happens. But that's not what you see here with Moses. And often people would clearly commit a wrong to save face. You know, back in Matthew, the 14th chapter, Herod, let's see, Matthew 14. When we read verse 1, at that time Herod the Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus and said to his servants, this is John the Baptist, he's risen from the dead, and therefore these powers are at work in him. For Herod had laid hold on John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because he had promised a young lady that he would give her anything she wanted and what she asked for. She asked for the head of John the Baptist, didn't she? And what did he do? He acquiesced to that. Fear of God was more important to Moses than the fear of mankind. I don't think he didn't not fear the Pharaoh, but it was more important to him to fear God. Over there in Matthew, the 10th chapter, if there in chapter 14, you back up to the 10th chapter, and he says in verse 28, Matthew 10, 28, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Jesus said, don't fear people who can kill the body. Well, how tough is that? There's not anything easy about that. And I don't think we would be in very much different circumstances than in the emotional circumstance that Moses would find himself in when he was up against the Pharaoh. It'd be tough. But look back with me in Hebrews 11th chapter, verse 28. By faith he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of the blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. I recognize it's a quick telling of the story of Moses, but it's enough to get across the idea. This is a great man of faith, and it's just different points in his life. But this last one, not really the last, you could also go in verse 29. By faith he kept the Passover, a sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. He obeyed God from sheer faith. I said, I mean, why would you put blood on a doorpost? No other reason other than that's what God said to. And there's a lot of that in our service to God. Why would you take a serpent and put it on a staff and put it up in the air for people to see who've been bitten by a serpent and then they would be healed? Why would Naaman finally go and dip in the River Jordan like the prophet told him to? Because that's just what God said do. I mean, there's so many times in our life of service to God, it's what it gets down to, just sheer faith. It's not because we've seen some trick or some miracle or something that made a deep impression upon our life. It's simply because this is what was taught. The man in John, the 9th chapter, Jesus says, go wash in the pool of Siloam after he put clay in his eyes. And he went and washed and came back seeing. And nobody would understand that. Nobody could explain it. We observe the Lord's Supper for the very same reason. We recall the death of the Son of God, and we memorialize it, we remember it, and we do it every first day of the week. And it's one of the great things about being associated with the saints around the world. At different times all around the world, I'm sure there are some groups or some saints somewhere in some isolated place that are remembering the death of Christ and are observing the Lord's Supper. And there's so many other things. Baptism would be the very same thing. Why would you be baptized? Because the Lord said that. If you're there with me, look over into the 12th chapter. Kind of how we bring our study to a close this morning or this evening. In the 12th chapter, we read verse 1 of Hebrews. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And one of the great things about that point is he's making a point about all of these people in the 11th chapter, verse 1 again. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, people who were faithful to God in so many different ways and so many different circumstances. Moses is one of those witnesses, and he's watching us. He would be encouraging us. He said, look beyond the present. Look beyond the unseen reality. You have to see it in your mind's eye. He said, fear God more than you fear anything else. He's not saying don't fear other things. He's saying fear God more than any of the other things you face. And obey God simply because God said do it. And that's such a powerful thought. Let us imitate His faith as we go through life. If you're here this evening, you're not a child of God, you do desperately need to be. You need to obey the gospel. You need to be a child of God, and you need to be able to call on Him as your Father and your Master and be a person who comes to Him in His appointed way. Jesus said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not shall be condemned. And that's the invitation that's been given for 2,000 years, and we're going to continue to that because we take the writings of those who were in the first century. If you're subject to heaven's call this evening, would you please come as we stand and sing?